Okay, we'll get started. Good morning and welcome to the School for Successful Ranching. I'm Grace Mentor and I will be moderating this session today. At this time, I would ask that you place all your phones on silent and remove your hats. There's a table at the back of the room where you can place your hats. We would like to take this time to thank our generous sponsors of the School for Successful Ranching for their support of this program and commitment to producer education. They have small displays set up in the hallway of this floor, and we ask that you visit their booths in the expo and say thank you. We couldn't do this program without them. Sponsors include Capital Farm Credit, Cattlemen's Education Series, Corvetta, the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo, Lone Star Ag Credit, Positive Feeds, Rabo Agrifinance, Stay Tough Fence Manufacturing, and Texas Beef Quality Assurance. Our first presentation is Understanding Landowner Liability, presented by Tiffany Dow Lashmet. Tiffany is an assistant professor and extension specialist in agricultural law with Texas A&M AgriLife Extension. She focuses her work on legal issues affecting Texas agricultural producers and landowners, including agricultural leases, water law, oil and gas law, eminent domain, easements, and landowner liability. She serves on the board of directors of the American Agricultural Law Association and is part of the State Bar of Texas John Hoffaker Agricultural Law Course Planning Committee. In 2016, Tiffany was named the State Specialist of the Year for Texas Agriculture by the Texas County Agricultural Agents Association. Tiffany grew up on a family farm and ranch in eastern New Mexico. She received her Bachelor of Science in Agribusiness, Farm and Ranch Management, summa cum laude, at Oklahoma State University, and her law degree, summa cum laude, at the University of New Mexico. Prior to joining Texas A&M AgriLife Extension, Tiffany worked for 4 years at a law firm in Albuquerque practicing civil litigation. She is licensed to practice in Texas and New Mexico. She lives in the Panhandle with her children and her husband. Please join me in welcoming Ms. Tiffany Lashmet.
Well, thank you all for coming. I will tell you, anytime a lawyer speaks up next to folks in cowboy hats and boots, I'm afraid no one's going to come to my room. So I'm very honored to see that you're here. I like to start off all of my presentations and admit to you up front that I am a lawyer. I know that no one likes lawyers, so I have brought some pictures to defend myself, because before I was a lawyer, I was a farm kid. I grew up on my family's operation out in New Mexico. We raise cattle and sheep and have some irrigated cropland. Most importantly, I'm busy raising a couple farm kids of my own. I took this picture last Christmas. You can tell what kind of room you're in if people laugh right away or if they wait for me to explain. My little boy went into the kitchen and he got an oven mitt and he pulled it up on his arm and proceeded to preg check his stuffed cow. If that doesn't say we're country people, I don't know what does. Okay? And for the economists in the room, Stan, the cow was bred. She got to stick around. All right? It was good news. Here's another picture of my son and my daughter. We gave them the job of halter breaking their doggy lamb. And they drug her around the yard for a bit and kind of got frustrated. And pretty soon we turned around and they had loaded her in their pickup and said, she goes anywhere we tell her. And so they're resourceful, if nothing else. So I say all of that with the idea that I do have some practical knowledge, and that's sure what I'm going to try to bring today is some information about what we've seen work, some things we've experienced the hard way, and just some practical information as we look at the issue of landowner liability. Every time I speak, I have to give a little disclaimer. I'm a lawyer. I'm not your lawyer, so I can't give anybody specific legal advice. If you want that, you've got to talk to your own attorney. They're the folks that bill you by the hour, okay? So with that, though, I am happy to take questions as we go along, and I'll definitely try to leave a bit of time at the end for questions there as well. Okay? So let's kick things off. We're going to first talk a little bit about basic landowner liability law, and then we're going to shift and look at 5 steps to liability protection. And those 5 steps are things that my hope is you can take them home tomorrow and get started on getting those things in place. The first part of this is pretty law school-y, so you're going to have to bear with me, okay? It's going to get better after this slide. All right, so in Texas law, there are two types of claims if someone gets injured on your property, okay? The claim will either be a negligent act or premises liability. And the difference depends on the injury and how it was caused, all right? So a negligent act claim means that the injury was caused during an ongoing activity, all right? A premises liability claim means the injury was caused by a condition on the land. So the best example of this, everybody loves to sue Walmart, and there are cases on this in Texas that talk about an employee was moving a box with a forklift and dropped the box on someone's head. That's a negligent act, all right, because there was an activity that caused the injury. If there was a crack in the sidewalk in front of the store and somebody slipped on the crack, that's a premises liability because it was a condition on the land. Does that make sense? All right, so in the ag context, I don't know, if you run someone over with your tractor, that's going to be a negligent act case. If somebody falls in a hole while they're hunting and breaks a leg, that's going to be premises liability, okay? And the reason it matters is courts analyze these types of cases differently. So for a negligent act case, that's just a regular negligence case, just like if you had a car accident and were texting and driving. That would be a negligence case as well, okay? And for those cases, the question a court would ask is, did the defendant act reasonably under the circumstances? And they would look at all the facts, okay, and decide if you acted reasonably or not. That's how a negligent act case gets analyzed. A premises liability case is what we're going to spend most of our time on today. Again, that's a condition on the property. And that analysis gets much more complicated, okay? So for a premises liability case, the question is going to be, did the landowner meet the required duty owed to the injured party? Okay, duty just means responsibility. So essentially, as a landowner, you have a certain level of responsibility to people coming on your property. If you meet that level of responsibility, if you do what you're required to do, you will not be liable. If you fail to meet that level of responsibility, that's when you can potentially be liable, right? And where it gets a little bit tricky is we put people into different categories, and the level of duty you owe depends on the category of person that's injured, all right? So let's look first at a trespasser. For our purposes here, this means anyone who comes on your property without permission. I don't care if you have signs or purple paint, none of that matters here. If someone is on your land without permission, the only duty you owe is you cannot intentionally injure them, and you cannot act with gross negligence. Now, we got somebody in the back who's going to giggle and elbow their neighbor and say, what? So I can't shoot him. Every program, it happens every program. There are rules about when you can shoot someone. I intentionally do not know them. Because what will happen is if I spout those off, I'm going to get a call from you in jail, and you're going to say, that little lawyer from A&M told me, blah, blah, blah. So I just, we'll leave that out, okay? But yes, you can't shoot them. You could be liable here, all right? So you can't intentionally injure, and you can't act with gross negligence. That's a very high standard for a plaintiff to have to prove. So I like to tell people this is a pretty landowner-friendly standard, all right? So let's take our example of if somebody fell in a hole and broke their leg. If they were on your property without permission, you're not liable unless you, like, shove them in the hole, okay? So that's a pretty high standard. That's for trespassers, all right? The next category of people is called a licensee. And that's going to be the people who are there for their own benefit. If somebody comes over for dinner, they're a licensee. If you let your neighbor hunt for free,
They're a licensee. Now the duty you owe is higher. Okay? You still can't intentionally injure them. You can never push them in the hole. Okay? But now you have a duty to warn them of dangerous conditions you're aware of that might be hidden to the plaintiff. Okay? So see how that's a higher standard. So now we have to think about our property. What dangerous conditions do we know about that might be hidden? If there are any, we need to tell our licensees. So I think the best example is like an abandoned well. If you've got an old abandoned well on your property and it's covered up with tree branches and limbs and vines, and you've got hunters coming, you better warn them about that because they might not be able to see it. Okay? Now, I usually get two questions here. The first one is, what about snakes? Right? Do I have to warn people about snakes on my property? The answer in Texas is no. Landowners are not liable for things like snakes, scorpions, wasps, ants. Okay? The basic rule is you're not liable, subject to two wonky exceptions. The first one is, if you brought the snake in from outside, you can be liable. You know this had to happen for this to be the law, right? So, you know, if you've got if you brought in a snake from the Amazon, you could be liable if he bites somebody. If he's a native Texan snake, no problem. Okay? The second exception is dumber. If you, like, round them up, you can be liable. So I guess if you, like, had a snake den and you, like, gathered the snakes around, you can be liable. Okay? So I like to tell people, if you're gathering, liable. If they're free range, not liable. All right? So that's how that works with the snakes. The one place I think that rule doesn't work for a landowner is for people that are beekeepers. Right? I think that's where you brought them in and you kind of gather them up. So I think for beekeepers, that rule that you're not liable probably doesn't work there. Okay? For beekeepers, you'd go back to our regular analysis we're walking through. All right? The other question I get a lot here is, what about my dog? My dog bit the UPS man, mine. And that will prompt a lawyer to do some research. And I learned, you're going to laugh at me, but it's the truth. I learned that Texas is what we call a one free bite state. What that means is the first time your dog bites someone, if you did not know the dog had dangerous propensities, you're not liable. You get one free bite. After that, now you know he has dangerous propensities and you can be liable if he bites somebody again. Okay? And to clarify, someone asked me this not too long ago. It's one free bite, period, not one free bite per person. Okay? Just so we're clear. Okay, so back to our categories. Our third category of person is called an invitee. That is somebody who enters the property for mutual benefit between themselves and the landowner. That's the UPS guy, the plumber, a paid tenant likely would be considered an invitee. Okay? For an invitee, you have the highest level of duty. All right? So you still can't intentionally injure them. You have to warn them of hidden dangerous conditions you know about, but now you have a duty to warn them of dangerous conditions you should know about with a reasonable inspection. Okay? So now you have this duty to inspect the property, which is, of course, a higher duty than just warning about what you know of. Okay? So that's how that works. Any questions on that? This is how, yes, sir. Like if a cow gets injured? If a cow injures somebody, the question's going to be, what category is the person? Okay? Let's say we got somebody who didn't have permission to be there. They climb the fence to take pictures with the pretty blue bonnets, right? And the bull mucks them out. They're a trespasser, and the question is, did you intentionally injure them or act with gross negligence? Don't think so. Okay? Now, if the person there is like a paid hunter and the bull mucks him out, now our question is, he's an invitee. Did you warn him of dangerous conditions on the property you should have known with a reasonable inspection? Hopefully, in your hunting lease, you said something about we got bulls in the pasture, right? The other thing we're going to talk about in a minute, there's a statute called the Farm Animal Liability Act that comes into play when we're talking about farm animals. So hang with me till we get to that, okay? Yes, sir. Regular guests are likely going to fall into the licensee category, same as like dinner guests. So if somebody just comes over like to hang out, likely going to be a licensee. Yes, sir. Good question. There's no rule on how the warning has to be given. So I'm telling you, you have to warn them. Well, how do I do that? There's no set rule. The lawyer in me never likes anything being oral, right? I don't like any oral warnings because you can't prove you did it. So if you've got a lease, hunting lease or grazing lease or anything like that, a real good way to do it is to put it in the lease, right? And so, for example, for a hunting lease, I always attach a map, right? Here, I just go to Google Earth and print the overhead map. Highlight, here's where you can hunt, and mark the dangerous conditions. That's one way to do it. Another way would be to put up a sign of some sort, right? So I'm thinking if I've got an abandoned well, I could stick a sign up that says abandoned well, danger, right, or whatever, and that would be another way to do it. It's just got to be a way that was a reasonable warning. Yes, sir? People that work for you get a little bit tricky. They get a little tricky. They're likely going to be considered an invitee, all right? And so you need to warn them about things you should know with a reasonable inspection, okay? There's a bunch of things, these five steps we're going to talk about in a minute, there's a lot of those that are really helpful for people injured other than your employees. Okay, so we'll talk in a minute about how employees or independent contractors that work for you fit in. So hang with me for just a second. Yes, ma'am. Good question. So her question is, what if I am a tenant with cattle on someone else's property and the landowner lets their family come out? How does this fit? Well, lawyers are going to argue about that, right? Because your lawyer is going to say you didn't let them be there and so they should be considered a trespasser. Their lawyer is going to say the landowner let them be there so they should be a licensee. We'd have some argument there. What I would recommend, we're going to talk about these five steps in just a second, so they're going to help. The other thing I'd recommend is I'd really talk with my landowner. And one thing I like to do in a grazing lease is if there are going to be people out there, I get notice of it. I, the tenant, want the landowner to tell me when he's going to let people out on the property. And that happens a lot because sometimes landowners will reserve hunting rights, right? Like you can lease it to graze your cows, but we're going to let so-and-so come hunt. I want notice of that before it happens. So you could write that into the lease. It should all be written down in black and white. Yeah. I'm a preacher of it should all be written down in a lease. Yes. We're talking about that more tomorrow at 11. Yes. Yes. Let's move to the five steps because all the questions you're asking are the five steps. Yes, that's step number three. Okay? So stick with me. All right. We're going to switch gears. This may be how you feel right now. No hunting, no fishing, no nothing, go home. Right? I'm like a ray of sunshine. So here's where it's going to get better. Okay? These five steps will let you sleep easier at night because you have protected your property as best you can if someone gets injured, okay? And some of these are real easy to do and are cheap. So that's good news from a lawyer, okay? Some of them may take a little more time and money. So let's walk through all five. The first thing I am going to preach. Every landowner in Texas needs liability insurance, period. I do not think there are exceptions to that. Okay? I don't care who you get it with. I don't care who your carrier is. I don't care if they call it a farm and ranch policy or a commercial ranch policy. I don't care. But you need liability insurance. All right? How much you need depends on what you're doing. So here's the example, right? My parents live out kind of in the middle of nowhere, New Mexico. We're neighbors with these folks on the front row. Middle of nowhere, right? Okay? We run cattle. There's not many people in and out of there. If we had a totem pole of liability insurance needs, we're probably close to the bottom. I got a friend who has a pumpkin patch near Austin. They're at the tip top of the liability insurance needs, okay? And so that's where you need to visit with your insurance agent about what you're doing on your property to sort of get an idea of how much coverage you may need. And that's where a good insurance agent that understands agriculture can become real important, okay? So that's the first thing. The second thing, make sure everything you're doing is covered, all right? So if you've got a farm and ranch policy and you run cows, you're probably good. But what if you decide to start like a, you plant corn and decide to let people come out and pick corn? Is your policy going to cover that? You need to make sure the answer is yes. What if you start leasing out your hunting rights and you're getting money for that? Does your policy cover that? You've got to double check. So I recommend every year you have a little powwow with your insurance agent and talk about any changes, right? Am I doing something different? Have we added another business? Have we changed something? Have we added additional land? Okay, that's an important one that's easy to miss. I fired an insurance agent over that a couple of months ago. We leased some land for our cattle. I had called him and said, hey, we got a new lease. It's 50 acres. We just want to add liability on that for on our policy. And that's a good idea, by the way, tenants, to have liability insurance on the land where your cows are. It's cheap. It's not expensive at all. Okay? I called him. He said, yep, no problem. We do our yearly review because I make him do it. And I said, well, I don't see where you added that lease land on there. He said, well, it's just down the road from your house. Don't worry about it. It'll just apply. Let me tell you this. Insurance never just applies. Always worry about it. Okay? So he got fired. I got somebody else. All right? So add those things. And like I say, it's less than $100 a year to add 50 acres for liability insurance. Okay? The other thing I will say, watch for any caps on coverage or things in the fine print. Insurance policies are a bear to read. I know. It's awful to have to try to do it, okay? But there is sometimes some fine print in there that might have an exclusion that's important, right? Or there just might be a cap. The best example I know of this is there are some farm and ranch policies here in Texas that are $1 million policies. And if you read the fine print, there is a cap on damages of $25,000 for spray drift damage. Now listen, there's a big stinking difference between $25,000 and $1 million, right? And unfortunately, a lot of times you don't find out about that until you needed the $1 million, okay? So check those policies, talk to those insurance agents. That's important, okay? And no matter who gets injured, this is going to be the first place you want to go when something happens. And that's what, another thing I want to say. There are two important things about insurance, right? We all know, right, they cover our claims if we get sued and we got to pay a claim. They pay that up to the policy limits. But remember, the other thing they do is provide you a defense, right? And so if something happens and I get sued tomorrow, the first phone call I make is the insurance, and they're going to hire me a lawyer, okay? And that's a real important benefit that I think it's easy to overlook when we're talking about insurance. Okay, the second thing, and we've already talked about this, it's a good idea to always identify any dangerous conditions on your property, do an inspection, identify dangerous conditions, and warn people about them. And the reason for that is, remember, that's the highest standard you owe. That's that invitee standard. If you meet that standard for everyone, you won't ever be liable. Does that make sense? So I think it's just a good idea. Think about those dangerous conditions on your property. If you've got people coming on your land, warn them about them. Put up the signs. Put it in the documents, those type of things. Okay? The next one was your question, sir, about the hold harmless or the liability waiver. This is called a bunch of different things. You might have heard it called hold harmless. You might hear it called the liability release. You might hear it called the liability waiver. All the same thing. Okay? The general rule, Texas will enforce liability waivers if they're properly drafted and if the injured party is an adult. Okay? Now hang with me. We're going to talk about how you properly draft one in a minute. The other thing I want to say here is the Texas Supreme Court has never decided if you can get a liability waiver and enforce it against a minor. The Supreme Court's never ruled on that. But there are several appellate-level opinions where courts have said we will not enforce liability waivers against children under 18. Okay? So here's what I'm going to tell you. I would still get the waiver. If you've got minors on your property, I'd still have them sign the waiver. And not the kid. The parent needs to sign it for the kid. But you need to know there's a chance a court may throw the waiver out. Okay? For minors, I got something else for you in a minute. We're going to talk about, the answer is, you want to get the Agritourism Act release. That's what you get signed for minors. Agritourism Act release. We're going to talk about that in a minute. Okay? Yes, sir. Yeah, his question is, think about all the dangers on a ranch, right? My warning's going to be 58 pages long. How do you do this? What I think you want to do is do something along the lines of, right, there are dangerous conditions included but not limited to, you could fall in a hole, you could trip over a rock, like whatever, right, list them out. But the key thing there, I think, is to identify things that are specific to your ranch, right? Not you could fall in a hole, but there's a big hole here that's covered by tree branches. Here it is. So I think the key there is to try to be specific to things on your ranch, but still sort of list the general ones as well. Okay? Okay, so how do we get a properly drafted release? This is something I would see a lawyer for, all right? Now listen, I know we're expensive, okay? I know. This is an issue that's complicated enough, I would talk to your lawyer. There are some legal things you can do yourself. Mr. Small, close your ears. Right, we don't need lawyers for everything. This is one I think we do. And here's my advice to you. That is, go get one of these drafted. The law on this doesn't change all that often. You can probably get this waiver drafted today and use it for the next 10 or 15 years. Okay? And it's, I mean, look, I don't ever say what a lawyer's price is going to be. This is not going to be crazy money, especially if you use a lawyer who does a lot of these. They'll have a form. Okay, and you can get that printed. Yes, ma'am.
Would it be one specific for hunters, one specific for guests coming on for other reasons and so forth, or could you have a very general that you could apply pretty much to everybody?
Good question. Her question is, do I have to have a different waiver if I've got hunters versus if I've got guests coming on to, like, ride horses or something? You probably could have a pretty general one that you just change a few words in, right? You probably want to tweak a few things, but generally the overall picture will be the same. Okay, good question. All right, here's the rules if you want to know how courts look at these. To enforce them, they have to be express and conspicuous. Express means they have to actually say the words, we release all claims against the landowner for negligence. It has to say that. If it just says we won't sue the landowner, that doesn't work. If it just says we release the claims, that doesn't work. It needs to say we release all claims against the landowner for negligence. The court's picky about that. Okay? That example up there also says gross negligence. I don't know if that works or not. There's some case law that says you can't waive a claim of gross negligence, but I think it's iffy, so I'd throw it in there. Doesn't hurt. Right? Okay. The other thing, it needs to be signed near the time of injury. There's no case law on what that means. My gut tells me to do it every year. Now, that's just a gut thing. One day I could be proven wrong by the court. I have our people sign them every year. So if I got deer hunters that come over and over, sign one every year. Okay? The other thing, it needs to specifically address the activity, right? So it can't just say, I release the landowner for all claims of any injury ever. It needs to explain, right? Like you're coming on the land to engage in a recreational activity or in this type of activity. That sort of detail needs to be in there. The other thing it needs to be is conspicuous. That means don't hide it in the fine print, okay? I would have this be a separate document from anything else. Do not stick this as a paragraph in your hunting lease. I think you're asking for a court not to enforce it. Separate document that says in big, bold letters, right, waiver of liability or hold harmless or whatever, so nobody can say they didn't know what they were signing. All right, questions? Yes, sir. Yep. Agreed. Agreed. Great point. Okay. His point is this, right? This is fine for a hunter. If I got a guy coming to buy a bull and I stick a waiver in his face, he's going to go down the street to the next guy with Angus bulls that's not crazy, right? I get that. So there's some balance here you got to find. If we got people coming to buy sheep at our house all the time. We sell show lambs. We don't sign waivers. We got liability insurance for that. Okay? And so you've got to find the balance there. Here's what I would tell you. If they are paying money to do something, I want a waiver. Hunters, if they're paying to go fishing or something like that. If you're getting money and it's a transaction, I would do it. Now, not money for the bull. That's a different deal. Okay? But if they're paying money to do something on the property, I would have the waiver. No, the best bet's going to be that agritourism sign we're going to talk about in a minute. Okay, so here's my point I want to make real quick. I'm giving you five things. Very rarely are all five going to apply to the same person, right? So like you say, my bull buyers aren't signing a waiver, but I've got liability insurance, and I've got the Farm Animal Liability Act we're going to talk about in a minute. And the goal here, right, is to basically have a whole folder of options for my defense lawyer, okay? And as long as one of them works, that's good enough for me. Okay? Yes, sir.
If I'm in on this scenario,
what time?
The hunter shows up at the gate and hands him a release. It's fairly obvious. He's going to read his left signature on it. He's ready to get going. Where does he stand?
Okay, his question is, hunter shows up at the gate to hunt deer that day. I'll get you. He signs a waiver at the gate, doesn't read it. He just signs that he's got a deer in his sights. Where does he fall? I think probably that's going to be enforceable. The concern you have there is he potentially could argue he was like coerced into signing the waiver, right? You gave it to him as he came in the gate. He didn't have time to think about it. You knew he didn't read it. I always advise get him signed before opening day, right? Have him sign when they come pay. Have him sign at the house, not when they're watching the deer across the fence. Even that said, if I'm a judge, I find it a pretty hard sell you were coerced to sign something to go hunt a deer, right? Like, you're coerced to do something if I tell you, like, you can't feed your children if you don't sign it. Hunting a deer, I don't think, is the same. So I would get the waivers signed ahead of time. I'm probably not going to lose too much sleep about the scenario at the gate. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, her question is, what about oil-filled workers and gaugers and those type of people? You're not going to get them to sign waivers. I mean, they're not going to sign them. So a couple of things there. If they're on the property on behalf of the oil company, hopefully in the oil and gas lease, there's an indemnification clause that if they get injured, they're going to indemnify you, the company. Honestly, if they're there working and they get injured, you don't see too many situations come up. Where something can come up is you got an oil worker that decided he was going to go fishing, right? Or decided he was going to go do something. Once they are doing something they're not allowed to do by their job, they're a trespasser. They switch categories. And now, remember, the duty we owe is that super high duty, okay? But again, that's a good example of where I want that liability insurance in place, to where if I do get sued by the oil worker, my insurance company is going to step in, okay? Okay, we're going to have to go a tick faster, because we're running out of time. The fourth thing we're going to say is consider business entities, all right? So there are certain business entities that offer limited liability if you create them. here's how it works. And the kind of the three that you mostly think about would be an LLC, a corporation, or a trust. Here's the idea. If I, Tiffany, own the farm in my name and somebody gets injured, okay, they can sue me and try to go after the farm as an asset, or they could come after any of my personal assets, right? My investment accounts, they could try to go after things like in my personal name. One way to avoid that is you can create a business entity and hold the ranch in the business entity. So instead of being, the ranch owned by Tiffany, it's the ranch owned by Tiffany LLC. And now you got to jump through the hoops. You're going to actually deed the ranch over to Tiffany LLC. And now if somebody gets injured on the ranch, they can go after the assets of the LLC, but they can't come after anything else I own. Does that make sense? We create a new entity. And some people will create multiple entities. An example of this, we've got a friend that has a custom hauling business. They farm. So they've got their farm in one LLC, the custom harvest business in a second LLC, okay? And the reason for that is custom harvest is fairly dangerous, right? You got combines on the road, good enough for me to be worried, all right? So if something were to happen, there's an accident with the combine, somebody can sue them and go after the assets of the harvest LLC. They can't come after the farm. They can't come after the assets of the individual. Does that make sense? Now, to get that protection, you've got to jump through the hoops to do it. The first thing is you've got to actually legally create it. Okay, and again, this is probably where I would use a lawyer to set these up. You're going to have documents about how they're going to operate, all right? And then you've got to go deed your stuff over to them. So in the deed record, there literally would be a deed from Tiffany to Tiffany LLC, okay? And then you need to keep separate bank accounts. You're going to file separate tax returns. So my point here is it's not easy to do, right? There are things you're going to have to jump through to get that protection, but it could be important depending on what you're doing. Now, which one of these works the best for you? It's going to depend on your operation. There's no magic bullet here, okay? What I would tell you generally is I'd visit with my attorney. I'd also visit with my accountant because there are a lot of tax implications here. And so the liability protection is a pro of creating an entity. It may be that some of the tax consequences are a con, and you need to think about that. Okay, if you bought the materials, they have a book or whatever, if you bought that, there's a little handout in there that talks about different business entity considerations for ranches. That's a pretty good handout. I'm also going to mention my podcast here in a minute. I've got a podcast episode where we walk through all of these with an attorney and talk about pros and cons of each. Okay, so I'll give you that info in just a second. The last thing we are going to speak, yes, ma'am. Yes. Her question is, does each LLC need to have separate liability insurance? Yes, it needs to be in the LLC's name for the assets the LLC owns. Yep. Okay, good question. All right, we're going to try to go through this quick. I'm sorry, I always run out of time. It's because I tell stories. Okay. There are three limited liability statutes in Texas. You need to be aware of them. I have a podcast on them as well. Okay. These offer limited liability to landowners. It changes the analysis from that first slide in a landowner-friendly way, okay? Let's walk through each of the three. The first one's my favorite. It's the recreational use statute. What this statute says is if the three requirements are met, the landowner is liable only for intentional acts or gross negligence. Now, that may ring a bell to you. That's the trespasser standard. This statute says you get to treat recreational users as trespassers, even if they had permission to be there. That's great, right? From a landowner perspective, yes. Okay, we get this much higher standard. Here's how it applies. Number one, you've got to have land. This can apply to your land in town, but there's more protections for ag land. So we're going to talk about ag land today. That's land that is suitable for growing crops, raising livestock, forestry. Suitable for. You don't have to be doing it. Okay? So we got ag land, number one. Number two, the plaintiff is there for a recreational purpose. Hunting, fishing, hiking, biking, riding four-wheelers. That's a big one. Okay? I don't know. There's a whole thing. Nature walks, taking pictures, and anything else associated with enjoying the outdoors. So that's a pretty broad definition. Now, this doesn't help us with our employees, right? Because they are not there for a recreational purpose, unless they're, you know, I've talked to the King Ranch before. They'll sometimes let their guys go hunting. Now, this statute could apply when the employees are hunters, not when they're working, okay? So ag land, recreational purpose, and you've got to meet one of the next three options. Any one of these three gets you the protection under this statute. The first option is if you don't charge a fee. If I let my neighbor hunt for free, this statute applies, and I'm only liable for intentional acts or gross negligence. So I think your neighbor kid that's hunting rabbits looks applicable to me, right? Ag land, hunting, he's not paying you. Okay? So this says only liable for intentional acts or gross negligence. Here's the second option. This is in legal mumbo. Let me just, in English, what that says. Add up in a column all of the income you made from recreational users last year. Get a total. So anybody that paid you to hunt or fish or ride four-wheelers, the income you made, add it up. In another column, add up all the property taxes you paid last year anywhere in Texas. Not just where you had the hunter, anywhere in the state. Get a total. As long as the income is not 20 times higher than the taxes, the statute applies. You got to make a lot of money for that not to work, okay? Okay, and then our last option is actually the best option. If you carry liability insurance coverage of at least $500,000 a person, $1 million per occurrence, and $100,000 for property damage, if you have that level of insurance or higher, the statute applies regardless of what you charge. And the law says any damages, any awards against you are capped at this level. Which means, let's say a plaintiff sues you for $200,000 in property damage. There's a cap. They can only get $100,000. And who's paying that $100,000? The insurance. It's not coming out of your pocket. So I really recommend, folks, that level of insurance. It's not super expensive generally to raise the level to that. It's worth it if you've got recreational users. Okay? That's the whole statute. There's no exceptions. There's no signs. Nobody has to sign any piece of paper. Okay? Questions on the recreational use statute? How much time? 15. Okay. Yes, sir. Good question. So he says, what if guests come over for like a barbecue or horseback riding? Yes. If it's on agricultural land, this applies to social guests. If they're doing a recreational activity, right? So if I'm sitting eating in your yard, probably not. If we're, you know, throwing the football or riding horses or things like that, yeah, I think this comes into play. Yes, sir. No. Good question. Thank you. What the appraisal district says your property is doesn't matter for this. It is if it is land suitable for growing crops, raising livestock, or forestry. Suitable for. Okay. Yes, sir.
My land, I've got a small acreage, but it's near a highway and extraterritorial jurisdiction of the municipality. They're annexing along the highway, and they're saying first it's 30 feet.
Yes, 100% yes. If it is suitable for growing crops or raising livestock, I don't care if it's even in the city limits or annexed, it doesn't matter. Suitable for growing crops or raising livestock. Okay? All right, we got to move. We got 15 minutes. Okay. Agritourism Act. Now, this is going to overlap with what we just talked about, but it's two different things. So this is two different defenses in your folder for your lawyer. Okay? The Agritourism Act says this. An agritourism entity is not liable if the plaintiff is on agricultural land for a recreational or educational purpose and the landowner placed a sign or obtained a signed release. All right, I'm going to walk through the definitions here pretty quickly. An agritourism entity is the person engaged in the business of providing an activity on ag land for a recreational or educational purpose, regardless of compensation. Ag land is that same test, suitable for growing crops or raising livestock. Educational purpose, the exact same definition as before. Recreational purpose, hunting, fishing, hiking, biking, plus it also applies to educational purposes. So even though it's called an Agritourism Act, and that makes me think of a corn maze, this applies to our ranches, okay? We got ag land. If we are providing a recreational or educational activity, this statute, it looks to me at least, applies. Now, this is pretty new. It was passed in 2015. We don't have any cases on it yet. So a court could interpret it differently. I'm pretty comfortable with the interpretation that it would apply to our ranch, okay? But there's an extra step in this one. In order for it to apply, you have to do something. You got to take an affirmative step. You either have to hang up a sign or get a signed release. Okay? These signs, cattle raisers sell them. I'm not here pitching for them, but they probably have some downstairs. Yes, Joyce says yes. Okay? They're like plastic blue signs, or I think you can get the fancy ones with the pretty face. Okay? I think the plastic ones are like $20. The fancier ones are more, okay? You can also print this yourself if you're a sign printer. There's no magic to these. It's got to be posted at or near the premises where the activity is conducted. If I got hunters, I put them on the gates. If I got a swimming hole, I'm going to put it by the swimming hole, okay? If you can get a sign for $20 and get extra liability protection, I'm doing it, all right? So sign is your first option. The other option is you can get a specific agritourism release signed. This is not the same as the release we talked about before. Separate thing. All right. The statute says it has to be signed before the activity by the participant or their parent, guardian, or managing conservator. Needs to be separate from any other agreement, so don't stick it in your hunting lease. It's got to be printed in not less than 10-point bold font. I don't know. All right. What I would do, I copied this from the statute. I would copy and paste that on a piece of paper and have them sign it. Okay? You have to do either the sign or the release. Either one gets you the protection. I like the sign because you hang it up and forget about it, right? I don't have to chase people down. The one place the waiver is better is for minor children. Remember I said before courts don't like to enforce those other kind of waivers? This statute expressly says it can be signed by the parent, guardian, or managing conservator. That looks like pretty good evidence to me a court's going to enforce it. If you've got minor children, I think this is your best bet to protect liability. So our rabbit hunter, I would have him sign this. His parent sign this. Yes, sir. That's not going to be helpful for you because I don't know. The court's never talked about that. He says, I got a sizable ranch, right? Let's say we got 10,000 acres. Where's the gate? How many of these do I got to hang up? It's got to be reasonable. I don't know what that is. Your guess is as good as mine. I'd buy a lot of those $20 signs and plaster them around. Okay? Yes, sir. Yeah. He says, FFA teacher brings his kids out. They're under 18 to your place. What's my best bet? I want those waivers from their parents. I would tell the teacher, you need to get me copies of these waivers signed by the parents. You also have liability insurance for those sort of situations, okay? I'm going to cut questions off. I'm so sorry. We're going to try to finish this last statute. I will stick around after as long as you have questions, okay? All right. There's a list of exceptions. The lawyers can fight over those. Hang up the signs. Okay. The Farm Animal Liability Act. This used to be called the Equine Act, but it got expanded now to cover all farm animals. And basically what this says is a person is not liable to a participant in a farm animal activity if the injury was caused by an inherent risk of a farm animal activity. In English, what that would mean is, right, if you're around farm animals, there are certain inherent risks. A horse can buck you off. And this basically says if the injury is caused by an inherent risk, the person's not liable. Okay? This one, we're going to go quick here. There's a whole list of inherent risks. We still have time. Okay. For a normal person like me and you, you don't have to hang up any signs. You don't have to get any waivers for this to apply. It just applies. So I'm going to tell you about a case from Waco. I think this is more useful than walking through all this. Not too long ago, a case comes out. One family went to the other family's ranch to hang out. At the end of the day, they end up, a six-year-old wants to ride a horse. They got three or four horses tied up, take two off the fence, put the six-year-old on one of the visiting family, another kid on the other, tell him, ride down the road to the diesel tank and turn around. Ride down the road, no problem. Turn around, what happens? Got barn sour horses, and they see the other horses. Take off running, buck them off. Six-year-old gets injured. Family sues the landowners, okay, for negligence. So the landowners raise the Farm Animal Liability Act, right? This is what this was made for. We have a situation where inherent risk of riding a horse is getting bucked off. Okay, so they say dismiss the case. The parents of the child say, we're going to just skip this, we just don't have time. The parents of the child say there's an exception to the Farm Animal Liability Act that means they could still be liable. The exception says you can be liable if the defendant provided an animal to the person and did not make a reasonable and prudent effort to determine the ability of the participant to safely engage in the activity and manage the animal. That means before you stick somebody on a horse, you better know something about their background. You better ask if they've been on a horse before. Probably better make them do a little circle in the corral. Okay? And you better think about the horse you stick them on. All right? Now, in this situation, in this case, that's what the family of the kids said. This exception applies, so the landowners could still be liable. The court found for the landowners. And what they said was, right, this is the classic Farm Animal Liability Act case. And they said, listen, the kid, in deposition testimony, it came out, the kid grew up on a ranch. He had his own horse. He had ridden horses multiple times before. And the big kicker was, anybody know? His mama was standing right there and watched him crawl on the horse and didn't say anything. Okay? So, but let's say mama wasn't there. And let's say he was a town kid at a birthday party with a pony. Okay? I just lived this because my kid's birthday party, we brought out the pony. Her name is Katie Elder. She's great. It was a month after that case came out. I was a nervous wreck the whole time. Right? Because I'm like, have you been on a horse? Have you been on a horse? Okay? All right. So, we're going to wrap up. Okay? The last thing I want to do is mention a couple of programs I've got coming up. If y'all are interested, I'm doing a program. It's called Owning Your Piece of Texas. It's free. It's basically 9 o'clock to 3 o'clock ag law that landowners need to know. Okay? And you're going to get a copy of a handbook I'm writing on that. We've got flyers up here in the front about it. There are also flyers at the ag workers booth in the trade show. Okay? The other set of programs are our ranchers leasing workshops. It's a half day on leasing. We got flyers for those. That one costs $50 a person or $80 a couple. There's dates here. Pick up a flyer here or at Ag Workers. Last things, a couple of resources I want to mention. I've got a blog. If you read blogs, just a website where I post ag law news. agrilife.org/Texas Ag Law. Or you can Google Texas Ag Law blog. Okay? I post twice a week about these cases, any checklists I do, things to know, okay? And if you put your email address in and subscribe, They'll just come right to your email like an email from me. Okay? The second thing, I've got a podcast. If you're a podcast listener, it's like a radio show, but it's not on the radio. You can listen on your phone. We're on iTunes or your podcast app. Or just go on your computer to this address, aglaw.libsyn.com. Every episode, I interview an ag lawyer about a different topic. We've done liability. We've done hunting leases. We've done grazing leases. Farm and ranch estate planning, water law. They're free. You can listen to me yap with another ag lawyer. Okay? So you've got that option. The last slide here, for those of you snapping pictures, this is probably the one you want. Email, phone number. There's that blog address, the podcast. I'm on social media if you want to follow me there. If you guys have questions, if you need information, call me or email me. I am here to help. Okay, I'm going to stick around. I'm happy to take more questions until they run me out of here, which may be now. I think they will be now. I'll stand in the hall when they kick us out. Okay? Thank you.
Okay.